Friends, will you pray with me? Oh God, God, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be pleasing in your sight. For you are our rock and our redeemer. Amen. There's a peach tree outside the doors of this chapel. And it grows fruit every summer. The fruit is a delight to the eye, but the soil the tree grows in is udorthent. That's a fancy word for soil that's a mixture of dug up rubble, refuse, and channel dredgings. Because of its location and its origin, the soil is likely to have unsafe levels of lead and arsenic in it. Toxins that have seeped into the dirt from generations of paint and gas and pressure-treated wood. The tree gets its nutrients from the soil. It can't separate out the nitrogen from the lead, and so the poison in the soil ends up being poison in the fruit. All of that means that if you eat the peaches that grow on the peach tree outside the chapel, you might get sick. Now, not one thing I've just said makes those peaches look any less delicious. And there is a child in this congregation who's had their eye on one particular peach since about May. Every week, they'd rush to church to make sure it was still there. They feared it would be stolen by a bird before it had the chance to ripen, or that somebody would pick it before the day would come that it could be theirs. On the outside, it looked like every other peach they'd ever seen. Orange and magenta and getting bigger all the time. Everything about it told them that it should be good for food. How could a tree growing on the grounds of a church be bad? No amount of me saying it wasn't going to be good to eat made one lick of difference to them. For who can doubt the evidence of their own eyes? The memory of their own senses about the goodness of a ripe peach. Was any part of their desire a sin? We don't need to think that hard. The answer is no. We know it's not. No part of wanting to eat a peach that looks exactly like every other peach they've ever seen is bad. It's only reasonable to think that something that looks just like something else that's always been good will also be good, no matter what anybody says. It's only reasonable to think that all fruit that is pleasing to the eye is also good to eat. What then can we say to Eve and the serpent? Eve and the serpent in a world before sin, wanting to eat some fruit from a tree. It's all well and good for us to stand on our side of the story, with centuries of theologies telling us what to think and say, Eve, how could you? But I wonder what we'd wonder if we could just put those theologies down for a minute and let the story speak for itself. When the story speaks for itself, it goes something like this. Eve comes in the middle of things. After the creatures of the land and sea, after the birds of the sky and the plants of every kind good to eat. After the divine permission to eat every fruit but one. Eve comes in after God tells Adam about the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. About after God's warning that if Adam eats of it at some point, he will die. Eve, who is less a rib pulled from the side of a sleeping man and more a powerful rescuer and counterpart to Adam in every way, never heard from God what God said about the tree. She only ever knew what Adam told her, which, as we just heard, raised the stakes from don't eat the fruit to if you even touch the tree, you'll die. This unlikely exaggeration means she's more open to suspicion when the serpent comes by for a chat. Now, in the garden, serpents were less a creepy crawly hissing on the ground and more a creature with arms and legs and the capacity to reason. And so when the serpent asks Eve about God and the tree, it asks something new. Did God really say, "You shall not eat from any tree in the garden"? And Eve, who's been eating all kinds of fruit and finding it pleasing to the eye and good to eat, says, "Of course not. It's just that one tree that will kill me." Perhaps in the act of saying it out loud, she realizes how absurd it sounds. Why would a tree that looks like every other tree that produces good fruit be bad? Why would God, good and loving God, make a tree of death in the middle of a garden full of life? Why would God, who made everything with love from the start, not want us to have this fruit too? While she's wondering, the serpent says more. "You won't die. Your eyes will be opened, and you will be more like God, knowing good and evil." Who wouldn't want that? Eve thinks. Who wouldn't want to be more like God? God who is so good and so loving and so creative. God who, as far as Eve can tell, has only made good things. Eve, still in a world without sin, has no reason to think the serpent would lie. And with death off the table, has no reason to think this fruit would be any different than any other fruit she's eaten. And so she eats. Adam, who heard the prohibition from the very lips of God, eats too. And together, their eyes are opened. Together, they learn that not all fruit is the same. What's the harm in knowing all fruit is not the same? For my part, it's the pain of being the person who explains to a 9-year-old that we've cared for our earth, the earth that God asked us to till and keep. We've cared for it so poorly that the very ground beneath our feet is poison. For me, it's the pain of being the person who makes their life a little bit sadder and a little bit smaller. The grief of knowing the difference between what looks good and what is good, and then having to tell other people about it. For me, it's the weight of knowing that when you share those truths with someone you love, you inexorably complicate their life. You make choices more difficult and put barriers between them and their desires, when all you ever want for the people that you love is for them to have everything that they want forever. Who then can blame God for wanting their beloved humans to live as long as they could without that weight? Not because knowing the difference between good and evil is sinful, but because knowing the difference between good and evil can't be undone. In a world where Adam and Eve didn't know the difference, Eve could stay friends with the serpent. In a world where I could keep my mouth shut, that peach stays just as good as any other peach forever. Knowing the difference between good and evil puts a responsibility on humankind that we didn't always have. An obligation to respond, when we're able, to good and evil in the world. For Adam and Eve, responsibility looked like getting their fingernails dirty. Looked like becoming people who understood the work that goes into tilling the earth so that fruit can grow. For Old South Church, responsibility looks like our sexton Richard picking the peaches before anyone could get sick. It looks like marching with the Boston Interfaith Climate Action Group last September, for cleaner energy and better care for the earth. Our obligation to respond looks like our support of Eastie Farms, farms that grow healthy food on raised beds for our neighbors in East Boston. Our obligation to respond looks like long conversations with curious old South kids about how the lead got there in the first place and about how seemingly innocent decisions can have lasting consequences. Knowing better comes with a responsibility to do better. Not because of our own sinfulness or for the sake of our own salvation, but because, like God, our compassionate hearts long to build a better world with and for the people we love. We cannot unknow what we know. But knowing the difference between good and evil does not leave us only with grief. It gives us a chance to choose what we do next. So we pick the poisoned peaches. We tend to the wounded earth. We tell the truth to the children we love. And we get our hands dirty, making the garden better. Because we love one another. We love this earth. And we believe it's not too late to build a better world.